Well, now we have the second part of our Jews of Kobe in Japan. And a number of you have texted me in the week to say, when are we bringing Cindy Klein back on? So joining us on the line is Cindy Klein. She's an international tour guide and her website is Cindy Klein Tours. And Cindy, when we last spoke to you, it was World War II. Several thousand European Jews, mostly Lithuanian, but also a number of Polish, were trying to escape Europe, and to do so, they needed transit visas through Japan, and in steps a key Japanese figure. Can you pick it up from there?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to just back up a little bit to catch up our listeners from last time, and those who may be listening for the first time and didn't listen last time. So, basically, for the Jews to get out of Lithuania, and correctly you said many of them are from Poland and some from other countries who went to, who were in Lithuania, we're talking 1940, they needed to go through an arduous journey where they had to get to Moscow. From Moscow, they had to take the Trans-Siberian railway to Vladivostok. From Vladivostok, they had to then travel to Japan, and then their ultimate destination was meant to be Curacao, for which they needed paperwork from the Latvian/Lithuanian embassy that said that they did not need a visa. So this complicated process, we're going to catch up with it now. So we have all these Jews who this has been set in place for them. They are ready. There were many who weren't ready to do this, but there were thousands, between 3,600, 4,600, we're not 100% sure, who were ready to take this journey. But the last thing they needed was that transit visa to Japan. So on August 1st, 1940, they start standing outside the office of a man named Chiuni Sugihara, who was then the Japanese consul to Lithuania. But I want to ask the viewers a question, and I will answer it.
I'm glad it's not viewers, because right now I look a mess, but you know, we know what you mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I keep saying viewers. Anyway, so that when I ask listeners a question, why would there have been a Japanese consulate in Lithuania during the war?
Excellent question.
I will answer the question, because no one can answer me right now. There was no reason. And there were no diplomatic relations. There were no trade relations. And in 1975, in an interview, Chiuni Sugihara, who was the consulate during World War II from Japan, who was the consul, he was asked by a man named Rabbi Marvin Tokayer. He was in an interview. He was asked this exact question, and his answer was: "Are you guys ready?" The answer was that he was sent there as a spy, because while Japan and Germany were together in the war, Japan didn't trust Germany.
Interesting.
And they had him in Lithuania, with the front was a consulate, but he wasn't really there to do consul jobs like issuing visas, etc. But let's get back to that. And again, I'm talking a little bit too much for this 10-minute slot, but I want to add a South African connection before I talk about Sugihara and the visas. I'm getting a little bit tangential, but it's interesting and important. There's a guy today, he's 96 years old, I think, and I believe he's still alive, a man named Sally Ganor. Maybe you've heard of him.
I haven't.
He was interviewed by a friend of ours, Leslie Glassman, who's a South African who lives in Israel. He was interviewed about his story. And I'm just connecting his story. It's a cute and interesting story. In 1939, Sally Ganor, who was living in Lithuania with his family and who was, I believe, a 10-year-old boy, was out with his mother getting an ice cream, getting a treat. And then he started to ask if he could go to the movies. And his mother said, "We don't have enough money." And, you know, this is the war times. How tough the ice cream was, his treat. And into the store walks a Japanese man. And he offers the money to the mother, says, here. And he says to the little boy, he says, you can call me Uncle Chihuni. Here, take this money and go to the movies.
Aww.
And then the mother answers to Sugihara, says, I'll accept your offer if you agree to come to our Hanukkah party. And this is December of 1939. And Sally Ganor's story is that, his version is that Sugihara had such a wonderful time at their Hanukkah party, he thinks that softened him to later wanting to help the Jews.
Wow.
If it's true or not true, it's still a beautiful story.
It is a beautiful
It's still a beautiful story.
Cindy, can I backtrack?
Now let's fast forward to the visas.
You fast forwarding and I'm backtracking. But was it always going to be through Japan, or how did those people fleeing Europe know to go to Sugihara and know to go to the Japanese consul?
So as I said last time on the broadcast, was before they could get all the visas and things, they had to make a plan. And the travel plan was to get that paperwork that they're going to Curacao. And in order to go to Curacao, the boat needed to go from Japan to Curacao. That was, they had to get to Japan. No, not the boat. Yeah, they had to get to Japan also by boat, and then they had to get on another boat from Japan to Curacao. That was the plan that was in place. Therefore, the next step on our journey was getting those transit visas through Japan. So on August 1st, 1940, they start asking Sugihara. Now, Sugihara doesn't know what to do. He's not really a consul, but there's all these people who need help. They need their lives to be saved. So he writes, telegrams Japan, and he only gets an answer on August 11th. And on August 11th, the answer he gets is that you are strictly forbidden to issue any transit visas to anyone. And on August 11th, very untypically Japanese, Sugihara starts to issue the transit visas. And he continues to issue these visas until he is actually fired and deported and stripped of his role and any connection to the Japanese government on August 31st. But in those 20 days, he manages to issue visas for thousands of people and saves many, many lives. Also, just like another cute, when you talk about these stories, since cute isn't the right word, but there were more visas issued late, even after he left, by an expert forger who actually used a potato. He cut a potato in half and was able to use it as a stamper and recreate visas, the visa format, and just change the names each time. So there were even more visas issued allowing people to get to Kobe. But I feel like I need to fast forward. I need to go a little bit faster now. So the Jews arrive in Kobe, okay, after this. And by the way, Sugihara didn't know that he saved these lives till much, much later on in life, and we'll get to that, hopefully. But they arrive in Kobe. After they get to Japan, they had to still take transport through Japan from the port of Tsuruga to Kobe, which was funded by the Kobe Jewish community. The Kobe Jewish community and even the local Japanese, to a certain extent, welcome them with open arms, and I'm referring to the Japanese. They have their own difficulties adjusting while they're there. But they adjust and they're welcomed into the community, but their stay starts to extend past that 10-day period. And so the Japanese authorities are brought in to interrogate, and they ask for the most important people of the Jewish community, because the Japanese way of looking at things is society is always hierarchical, so you need to see who are the top people. So they send a couple of rabbis, the Amshinover Rebbe and a rabbi named Rabbi Shatskiz, and they send them the next day to be interrogated. They send them with two translators, One is a Japanese man who actually ends up, he's a story, and he's an episode in himself, Avraham Kotsugi, who ends up converting to Judaism later on in life, but he's translating from Japanese to English, and they have another translator, a Jew from the community named Leo Hanin, who's translating from English to Yiddish. And just a little bit about this interrogation, the main question that they ask, and it's a horrifying question, the main question that the interrogators ask is, we want to know why the Germans think that the Jews are so abominable, so disgusting, that they need to wipe them off the face of the earth.
And from that, pass or you fail, and that determines whether you're Jewish or not?
No. They ask them this question. Mm-hmm. They want to understand, because they're together with the Germans in the war, even though they've just ironically welcomed
Jews. And they want to understand what the Germans know.
They want to understand, why do the Germans want to kill all the Jews? Wow. What's so abominable about the Jews? What's so dirty, disgusting, abominable? I don't know. They used a whole bunch of adjectives. And the Rabbi Schatzkes freaked out. He froze. He didn't know what to say. The Amshin of a Rebbe looked the interrogator back in the eye, and by the way, to this day in Japanese culture, you do not look someone in the eye, but he looked him in the eye confidently, and he answered him, because we are Asians.
Okay. Very good answer.
And, very good answer. And the interrogator goes back to him, and he says, what do you mean? please clarify. And he says to him, you realize that the Germans, you know, see themselves as the Aryan race, and they are doing a racial cleansing. They're after the gypsies, they're after the Jews, they're after not only racial, they're after the homosexuals. The yellows and the black. And they said, You are next. And the interrogator turns back to him and says, prove it. And he gives him an example that had just been in the news, that a Japanese diplomat who was living in Berlin had gotten engaged to a German woman, and the German authorities forbade them from marrying. And so the Japanese interrogators hear this information. They go to meet quietly by themselves. They come back to their, I guess you can call them interrogatees, and they say to them, I don't remember exactly what they said to them, but they basically became more lax about the visas. Now, some people stayed for a few months, some people stayed for a few years. I found a siddur in the synagogue in Kobe that had a dedication to a woman who was a Holocaust survivor who was saved by Sugihara and lived there till she died in 1994.
Amazing.
So that was unusual.
Amazing.
But people, because of this interrogation and these answers, they became more lax. And I'm guessing we need to sum up here.
No, we don't even have time to sum up. But Cindy, what I do want to say is this will just be an evolving series, and we'll have to come back to you for Jews of Kobe Part 3. That's Cindy Klein, an international tour guide, and her website is Cindy Klein Tours. And we'll have her back on, assuming that she agrees and we can find a mutual time next week, where we'll look at Jews of Kobe Part 3. And who knows, there might even be a Part 4.